Extra Points is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. It must be 21 years or older.
Welcome, Extra Points listeners, and congratulations on making it through yet another week. Good news, the weekend awaits with its enchanting promises of endless sports and free time that ends up with you screaming silently at some jerk in the Costco parking lot instead. Or maybe I'm just projecting. Either way, we know how hard you work, and while we hope listening to all our shows makes that time go a little faster, we don't want that to feel like work in and of itself. So we've had our producers pick out their favorite bits and put them together in a half-hour supercut for you to sample. I know, I can't believe we have producers either. If you like something, check out the full episode the next week wherever you get your podcasts. In the meantime, thanks for supporting the network. And let me just say from the bottom of my heart as the co-founder that I sincerely hope your favorite team still loses to mine. Enjoy the shows.
And to kick off this best of, Dave Damashek is joined by Chris Long on -3, and they get into the differences of a Joe Burrow-led team and a Josh Allen-led team.
Burrow's a disruptor who is like, you mentioned, like you start doing tiers of QBs and everything. Mahomes, the 1A is Burrow. I just think we've forgotten about him a little bit because he was hurt all last year. But
Josh Allen forget about for me.
Nope, not better than Burrow. No. Look at January.
I'm not saying he's better.
I'm saying give me a guy like you want to win the big drafting game in January. I'll take Burrow over Allen.
I know, but the injuries are concerning to me at this point.
Okay, that's fair. That's a fair.
You know, like with Josh, I've just never seen Josh. And the quarterback run game, I just put an emphasis on that as a defensive player. Joe Burrow's a killer. If Joe's healthy and he can operate an offense like and it's set up for him, like, yeah, he reminds me of Brady at times. CJ Stroud's going to have a chance to be 1A soon.
Yeah, that might be true. But in the meantime, it does seem to me that we have like some amnesia here, obsessing over the Bills moving Stephon Diggs, who didn't do much in the second half of last season. It was a bad relationship, apparently, with him and Josh Allen. So not really workable going forward. Massive. I mean, now they got to eat that contract, which should be a red flag to the Texans that they
right. Like here, we'll actually pay more of his deal than you.
Well, that's why I am not fully embracing, even though the Steelers are like, we got Russ, what a leader. It's like, man, two stops, three different coaching situations over 3 years. None of them worked out, but we're supposed to accept it. He is the ultimate pro who's going to teach all the other guys how to comport themselves and all that. I'm skeptical.
Yeah, I want to see a guy who can make throws. You know,
it's got to be Fields at some point. Yeah, sooner rather than later.
I agree. I don't want to disrespect Burrow, though. I just want to say I love Joe Burrow. I'm kind of a Josh Allen fan. You know, like I watch him play and I it's one of my favorite things.
Why? Because he told you were in shape at the Super Bowl?
No, this is before that. And no, he did say I look great.
I saw.
I just think the guy's ceiling is incredible. And that's what I'm after when I'm looking at that. And listen, the Burrow thing, he might be 1A for me if it weren't for just the injuries and like the concerns I have there.
Man, Joe Asai doesn't shove 15. He's in two straight Super Bowls, Burrow, and the conversation is very different. Okay.
Totally agree. He's the only guy that's beaten Mahomes, really.
That's right. And you know what? But that's how narrow the difference is between winning it and Tannenbaum and I were talking about the idea, as extreme as it sounds, like if you're the Bills, you never would move on from Josh Allen. If you're the Ravens, you don't move on from Lamar Jackson. But the evidence is there that you're more likely to win a Super Bowl if you just reboot at the quarterback position and land. You know, the trick is getting the right guy to replace him, but your chances diminish by season 6 on down the line.
I just wouldn't replace Josh.
Of course, you never would. You wouldn't do it for a number of reasons. It would seem insane to do it, but the math does kind of favor, like, just get that guy back on paying him $2 million a year and flesh out the entire rest of the roster.
Is Burrow immune from that axiom?
No. But what I was going to say, actually, I'm glad you reminded me because I forgot the point I was trying to bring up to you. The amnesia is that, like, well, now the Bills are doomed because what are they going to do without Stephon Diggs?
And they did a lot without him in the second half of the year last year. 34 catches for like 315 yards.
And why did they do that? It's because they now have two stud tight ends. And who is their arch rival who they can't get past in January? It's the Chiefs. And is it a wide receiver that drives that offense? No, it's the tight end that does. So I don't think it's a big deal.
Not just that. You know, like Kansas City just lost Willie Gay. They didn't get better in that area of the field. And also, I think Shakir can do a lot of the things in the short game that, you know, they relied on Diggs for. And I think Samuel was with Joe Brady in 20. So I'm looking at it through rosy colored glasses, and they have a two now, which would be a high two, right? With the Vikings pick that they got from the Texans in 25, they could package either their first in 25 or that second and go up and get somebody, if I understand it correctly. And that's what I would do. I would like, hey, listen, that's something in between burning the ships. It's like, if you can access high caliber, cheap talent, like I'm going for it. You know, it's about giving Josh just something to work with.
But you also got to get lucky a little bit. That's what the Chiefs did. They drafted, I mean, they did a great job drafting, and they landed on some defensive pieces that ended up being massive difference in January. Huge. And that's what the Bills have to do more than
worry about the Bills defense more than the offense.
Yeah,
worry about the Bills defense more than the offense.
Comedian and Dodgers fan Megan Gailey joins Sarah Tiana and Dave Damashek on Extra Points, and Megan gets into Shohei Ohtani coming to the Dodgers, the pressure on him to win, and of course the gambling controversy surrounding him.
Last thing for you, Gailey, is to get your thoughts on, you're a Dodgers person, and it kind of marries up with Purdue, because all of a sudden now Purdue could never get over. This was a tough team to root for, because for all their success, they couldn't get to the final. Now they're there, and all of a sudden now your team is the bully, and everybody's rooting for Cinderella NC State. So you should feel bad about that, except that you're accustomed to this as a Dodgers fan, and now you're rooting for Ohtani. What's going to happen there?
I think he's going to be totally fine. I think he is like truly a superstar. I went to opening day. I saw him get thrown out trying to stretch a double into a triple. And I think once he just sort of like settles down and lets all of these, like all this chatter that's happening and these bright, bright lights that necessarily were not in Anaheim, he is a star. Like, he just has it and is so excited to be here. And I think manages his career so well and is really smart. And
manages his career well. I don't know yet. The jury's out on that part.
My jury is in, and my jury has also thrown out any gambling impropriety. I just like, and I've told Sarah this personally before, it's like, I love him. And so like, I need him to be so perfect, because to have anything outside of that would crumble my worldview. So it's like, I've gone so all in on him. I'm attracted to him. I think he's funny. I think he's so talented. I want to buy my husband a full Ohtani uniform to walk around the house in. Like, I am putting such blinders on. And it's also this thing of like, why do we need our athletes to be perfect? Right. They are human. And like, all of our athletes are better than every single politician. So like, let's give them some grace. He's a baseball player in a foreign country where he barely speaks the language. And like, yeah, maybe he's relied on some people he shouldn't have. That's what I would do too. Like, all my best friends are insane. If my best friend from Indianapolis was handling my money, we'd both be in jail. Like, he is maybe flawed, but that's okay. And I mean, even with the passing of Vontae Davis this week, it's like, we have to stop being so hard on on these athletes. And we really don't understand the mental toll it takes on them. These are human beings. I remember when Vontae retired at halftime, and the way people spoke about him was vile. And like, are we going to draw a direct line from that to this? I don't know, but I do still think it's a good lesson to be like, these are human beings. And yes, they're making $300 million, but that does not cure mental health issues or all this.
No, stuff. It's the paradox is that it's funny, because this millennium, we really has been about in terms of sports media, to some degree at least, has been getting under the helmet, as it were, versus regarding them as one-dimensional human beings who, you know, who play for our pleasure and then go about their personal lives, and we have no awareness of what's going on there. This millennium, though, we now do know that, and somehow, instead of us liking them more, it gives us more to use against them, I guess. And I think it's always, as I always say about like the Reservoir Dogs effect at the end where everybody shoots everybody, like fans of the rival go after Ohtani now and go after the Dodgers. And you feel compelled to, as a Dodgers person, to defend that. You don't have to defend the behavior. Everybody ends up getting shot if everybody goes after everybody.
Yeah.
It's a weird place that we found ourselves in, that everybody is on the level. It is a bummer that athletes collectively don't have the frame of mind that at least some percentage of celebrity types seem to have, which is like, people on social media are dorks if they're tweeting at me their hate, like they don't know, you know, but some percentage of people are obviously susceptible to that criticism, and then it gets in their head and you know, and leads to bad stuff. But anyway, go ahead, sorry.
I just think, first of all, I don't think athletes get paid enough. Like, I don't care how much Ohtani's getting paid. Like, the Dodgers are going to make triple what he's getting paid, you know, just in TV deals from Japan. So, like, who gives a how much they're getting paid? I don't, you know, I think I only look at the performance regarding your pay. You know what I mean? So, like, last year, Trey Turner's making $300 million. He's in a huge slump. Rendon is making, you know, $20 million and he can't get a hit, you know. So for Shohei, you know, it's like, all right, I think right now he's like mentally a little taxed. It's clearly showing at the plate. Obviously, he's still rehabbing an arm. So like there's that. And there is immense pressure on him to live up to these contracts. And I think not only is the narrative surrounding, you know, the gambling scandal weighing on him, but I think the weight of a contract like that does weigh on you, like the pressure of the money. And I think the Dodgers, the best person that the Dodgers signed this offseason was Teoscar Hernandez. Like, he has immediately made an impact in the clubhouse and on the field, because he's a guy that keeps everybody laughing. He keeps you happy. He's hitting them out of the ballpark. He's getting on base. And like, to me, those kinds of guys are invaluable. The way that like the Braves signed Chris Sale, you know, for 2 years. So 2 years, just to tell you like, hey, this isn't a 1 year thing. We need you and your voice and your chatter and your fire and your anger. We need that. That's what we're paying you for. If you give us 20 games, great. But what we need you to do is yell at the whole team, like, let's go, you know, like that's what we need. That's what we're paying you for. And so, you know, when it comes to the Dodgers, I think the Dodgers as a team and as a collective made so many huge signings that the weight of that is kind of showing, you know, like you see Mookie going off because like Mookie doesn't have any of that pressure. He signed his deal. He took on his pressure 3 years ago. But, like, you're seeing these guys without all this pressure, like Will Smith just signed a big contract, a little bit of pressure, you know, like all of that pressure gathers at the same time. And so like, you know, the Dodgers have the most to lose and the most to live up to.
It's,
and like,
you know what that's called,
Tiana? That's not a place I would like to be.
Let's take a quick break here.
You know, when the conversation turns Stampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. OmahaFull. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet.
21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
With Joel Embiid returning to the Philadelphia 76ers, Mark Gunnels and Martin Weiss on Lemon Pepper Parlay get into if this changes things in the East and how it'll affect the 76ers going forward.
We talked about a little bit before, you know, the East, Boston, Milwaukee, kind of settled on those two teams. You like the Knicks, but I don't think you think they're actually a legit threat to Boston.
I like them better when I thought OG Anunoby and Julius Randle would be back.
Okay, got you. Fair enough, fair enough. So, you know, with Embiid coming back with roughly 10 games or so left, it's a good benchmark, I think, to kind of get back into the flow of things, you know, get some rhythm, get some couple sweats in. So I think that's fine. I think that's fine. But I just don't know if it really means much. Like, can they? Are they a legit threat to Boston? Are they? Like, as
if
right
Joel Embiid comes back and is playing the way he was playing pre-injury,
yeah, but
which
do you expect
was,
that? I think that's a tough ask for him, because he was playing at the clear MVP when he was playing. Like,
I'm just clear. Look, so let's just entertain the thought that he may, right?
Okay. All right.
If he does, and they beat Boston in the first round, that's going to be the funniest thing of all time.
God. I'm looking at the standings right now, and yeah, they're the 8th seed. So they'll be, as of today, they will play the Heat in that 7-8 matchup. I would probably pick, I don't know, the Heat are weird. Or they might, I don't know. That'd be a good game. But if they win that game, they'll be the 7th seed. So, I mean, if you are Boston, though, I will say this. You don't want to play to Philly in the first round with Embiid. Like, that's not an ideal first-round matchup. I still would pick Boston, but that would at least – I think Philly at least went 2 games. So, like, that would give you some pushback. But to be fair, if you're Boston, does it really matter? Because even if you play Miami, Miami's kind of had your number. So, I don't know what you would rather prefer in the first round, to be honest with you.
I think we are cruising for a Joel Embiid versus Jason Tatum 1-8 series in the first round of the playoffs. And if the dog, if the Celtics lose, bro, the conversations are going to be unbearable. They already are like trending on, like, you know, I mean, the Jaylen Brown slander will hear no end. Jason Tatum will catch all types of shots. You know, he's not a clutch time performer. He's like, he just had 40 in a closeout game against this exact same team just a year ago. But it's going to be because this Boston team is in a very unenviable position of being one that it only matters what you do in the postseason. That's it. That's it. You can't do anything in the regular season at this point to better your case or better your standings. Like, all that matters is what happens in the postseason. And especially with the way that they have cruised through the Eastern Conference so far, securing the top seed in the East before anybody else had locked in a playoff spot, it's crazy. But if they lose to Embiid and Maxey, oh boy, oh boy.
Yeah, that would be disgusting. So, yeah, they're in a position where more than likely they're going to play either Miami or Philly in the first round, because I don't see the Bulls or the Hawks beating either one of those teams in that second play-in game, whoever loses between Miami and Philly. But Miami could actually still get the six because they're only a game behind Indiana. So Indiana could still fall back to seven. So we still got to wait how that plays out right there. But I think big picture-wise, if you're Boston, I think now is the time. Man, they still got 10 games left. So still obviously play the next few games. I do think they should rest their last couple of games. I think that will be vital for them just because they've been going so hard all year, like blowing teams out left and right. I know they had a couple of weird games in Atlanta last week. I actually want to talk to you about that. Did those games, those back-to-back losses in Atlanta, give you any cause for concern, or was it just a little blimp on the screen for you?
It gave me the same cause of concern I've always had about the Celtics. It's their shot distribution lends to this. It will lend to blowing teams out, but also allowing teams to come back on big runs because they don't have a guy who turns the water off. They don't have they turn the water off by shooting another three. Go to the rim, dunk on somebody. Go to the rim, get fouled. And they're like, no, I would rather dance, and then shoot. Which, when it's on, it's on. But when it is off, it's terribly off. You know, the Celtics attempt the most three-pointers in the NBA and attempt the fewest two-pointers. No team has ever won a championship with that big of a digression in their shot profile. Like we were talking earlier with the women, Caitlin Clark is layup or three. But other players on the team, when they get the ball, they'll hit that elbow jumper. Like, you've got to, like, Kate Barton hit that elbow jumper like three times last night. Like, you've got to have three-level scores. Boston has none. They don't have a single three-level score. Jason Tatum is really good. He's incredible. MVP candidate year in, year out, whatever, on the fringe of it. But he does not have a one dribble pull-up. It's all to the side. It's all to the back. None of it. And you see every great scorer in this league has something that they can do from 13 to 17 feet out that gets them a bucket.
Yeah, no, 100% right. And I'm over here looking. I need a reminder of how good Embiid was playing. It's been so long, almost 3 months.
The guy was averaging like a point a minute.
He was averaging 35 points on 53% shooting. This guy doesn't just lay up and dunks. I mean, he's shooting threes. He's shooting middies. Like, it's not just all around the rim. 11 rebounds. And he was giving you nearly 6 assists a game, man. So, yeah. I mean, the guy, remember, I don't know if you remember, Martin, he scored 70 in the game this year. Remember that game against San Antonio?
A lot of free throws, but still.
Yeah, he shot like 40 free throws, it felt like, in that game. But nonetheless, he scored 70 in a game. So, I mean, if he can even get back to about 75-80% of what he was playing this year, they have a puncher's chance. They have a puncher's chance. Now, I would still pick Boston in a first-round matchup. I don't know if you're going as far as you're predicting the upset, or you just kind of want it just for the social media outcry?
Well, we have to see. We have to see how Embiid looks over the the few. But 10 games is a nice, you know, 10 games is a nice solid ramp up for the playoffs.
With the MLB season in full swing, Jen Piacenti joins Toby Mergler on Trendy to give out some of their favorite MLB futures to place for the season.
What about your Orioles or your Pirates? Are you seeing good values on their division odds? Pirates are plus 700. The Orioles are only plus 180 and basically a coin flip with the Yankees.
Orioles are, I mean, I'm staying out of the, actually, that's not true. The team I would take in the East, if they're still 7-1, which they were preseason, is the Rays.
Rays are still plus 700 at Caesars.
Yeah, I actually did make that bet because the Rays consistently win the division. They just do. They're just a couple seasons removed from a 100-win season, and they are consistently undervalued because the Yankees are the bigger name. Nobody goes to Rays games. No one even, I mean, Jason Collette is the only person I know that roots for the Tampa Bay Rays. There are no Rays fans. But that could be a value for you. And I do believe in the Baltimore Orioles. Don't get me wrong. But in a division this good, it could very well be that one team ends up with the wild card and one team ends up with the division title, right? We saw this last year with like the Astros and the Rangers. Like technically the Astros won the AL West, even though the Rangers won the World Series. And I can see that happening in the AL East division this year, and who it's going to be between the Yankees, the Orioles, and, you know, I know the Rays are a longer shot, but they have so much talent coming up. Junior Caminero is coming up. I mean, they have so much talent there. I know they're without Wander Franco, but they get things done. Kevin Cash is smart. They play money ball. And for that payout, I like that maybe 7-1, maybe even better than the Royals bet.
What about the Pirates at 7-1? Where would you rank those between the Rays and the Royals and the Pirates?
Again, I like the Pirates as well. They are the only team to start 4-0 for the season besides the Yankees. Both those teams look really hot, but again, no value on the Yankees, right? So Pirates, there's your value because it's a weak NL Central. I'm not really buying the Cubs. The Cardinals haven't looked so good so far. I mean, who else is there in the NL Central? So I'm in for plus 700.
All right.
Cabrian Hayes, O'Neill Cruz, Connor Joe. I mean, they have the talent.
When will they bring up, Market Brett? It's Skeens. Is that how you say his name?
I think sooner than later.
No, I'm Skeens. Sorry. I'm having Brett Market. Is Skeens the pronunciation?
Skeens.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure I had that right.
Yeah.
Brett, roll again. If they actually start to enter a race here, Jen, do you think they bring Skeens up really soon to give them a chance to actually win this division?
I think that they should. There's no reason not to, and there's less penalties for bringing up players early now. And so, yes, I think we will see Skeens soon.
Well, in that same vein, I mean, is there any other division winners you wanted to highlight before I ask you one last question?
Yeah, no, actually, those are really probably my three favorite. I think, you know, there's really no value in betting the Astros or the Rangers. It's just all kind of like not worth tying up your money for. The Dodgers, it's ridiculous. You're not going to make a bet on the NL West. So I think that's it.
Well, you brought up the reduction in penalties for bringing up the kids. And so I am, as everybody who's listening to this knows, a Washington, D.C. sports fan, and that includes the Nationals. 2019 was magical. Every moment since then has been excruciating. But I look at their totals this year, Jen. 65.5 looks so low to me. And this isn't me being a homer because I bet against them pretty regularly and things like that. I love going to the games, but I don't have delusions of grandeur that they're going to go out and win the league this year. But they won 70 plus games last year, and they have an entire new outfield sitting down in the minors, ready to come up as soon as they can get some of the cost and player control things moved away. So like when we have Woods and we have Cruz and we have everybody else comes up, are they really going to be six games worse than last year? The math doesn't add up to me.
I don't think they are going to be six games worse than last year. I agree. I think that I would take the over on that win total. I still don't think they're going to be a great team. I don't think they're going to contend to win the division. They're still striking out at a much higher rate than they should. Again, very small sample size. But let's say Mackenzie Gore is good. That's a possibility.
For sure.
He could be an ace. He was a top prospect. What if he turns it around? I mean, there's a lot of ifs that can break the right way. And as you said, I just don't see them being worse than last year. So to have their run total even lower, I agree. I would take the over there.
Yeah, minus 110. You're not even playing heavy juice. And I'm not saying they're going to compete for the division, but you win this bet with 66 games. They basically have to just avoid losing 100 and you cash. And so this, despite it being my team, I would much rather play that than play the Dodgers at like 108 or whatever outrageous number you have to get. Take the team with low expectations that can now bring people through the system faster, that also has been losing for several years and loaded up on prospects as a result. So that is my favorite feature. And as you said, it's exceptional. Acceptable to bet your favorite team.
And let's stop down for a quick break here.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
And to round out this best, we have Dave Damashek telling Kevin Hench the very funny story about the final moments of his high school basketball career.
Well, you know, my sad story, right? Of they did put the 3-point in before my senior year. And I was really excited about it. And I set my goal, a simple goal. Dave was barely going to make the team. 13th man on a 12-man team. And I got on there as an afterthought, as a senior, worked hard. You know, that's what Damashek's all about. And against our century-old rival, last regular season game of the year, obviously I wasn't going to be playing in any playoff games. I wasn't going to be suiting up for those, but I was suited up. And we were up 20 in the late stages of the fourth quarter. And my teammates, at the time I thought, what nice guys. They just wanted to laugh at me. I was their punchline. I didn't know it at the time. I thought I was just one of the fellas. But they were like, put Sheck in. Come on, put Sheck in. Clear the bench. Finally, after the 9th man and then the 10th man and then the 11th man, my pally, Richie Perkins, finally got in there. Finally. Couple minutes left. Damashek was put into the game. And the crowd cheered. Again, did I know that I was the punchline? That I was a clown? No, I didn't. I was excited to be in the game. And finally, I was going to have a chance to make my three. And as you know, Hench, at my best, which was not very good, but at my individual best, if I was all alone with all the time in the world, I could stand there. I'm coordinated. I'm just slow, but I'm super coordinated. I can stand there and make a three-pointer if uncontested, as you know. Not as much as you do. Do you have anything to add there, Hench?
I've got so many questions. First of all, I want to go back to the Sheck working hard part.
I wasn't. I used to get drunk before.
I can't see you diving. I can't see you diving for a loose ball. I can't see you taking a charge. I can't see you doing anything that would define working hard on a basketball court.
What I did was the one virtue I had, as I say, is when we would do this, because we were end of the bench guys. So we served as the scout team always. And so if we were going to throw a zone at a team, I would then be a wing and I would, catch and shoot all day. And I could make it tough on you on a good Damashek day. I could knock them down if you left me unchecked. I could do that. But outside of that, I had zero value outside of behaving like a goon in the locker room to lighten the fellas up and have a laugh. Me and Richie we're good at doing that. And as far as that goes, we would in Swissvale area on my way back to Wilkinsburg, Turtle Creek from downtown, there was a beer distributor known to high school kids that you would just pull up to. It was a drive-through. and they would just throw the cans of beer, the cases of beer in your trunk, no questions asked, and you would be all set for the weekend. And so me and Richie and Brett and Ben would do that every Friday. And whatever beers were left over from that case, me and Richie would polish off in the car after class and before practice on Mondays.
This part of the story tracks. This is Sheck Hustle.
Now, some of the time, because it was winter in Pittsburgh, those beers would freeze or largely freeze. So what? We would power through them. That's what I'm talking about when I say work. You know, we had to work to make those beers drinkable. Beer popsicles. So we would go and goon off in practice on Mondays, drunk and otherwise. What was ironic was our best pal was Ben Losky, and he was the captain of the team. And he was the most outraged that we would show up drunk and we'd screw around in practice. And he would throw the ball at me all the time. And he'd be like, "You can do, stop effing around. This game may not be serious to you because you're two clowns, but the rest of us want to win it." And be like, "Light up, man. You were drinking those beers with us last night. Like, what are we talking?" Anyway. So last game of the season, the clock's ticking down, and with about 20 seconds left, finally, maybe my moment is at hand, because the other team is at the free throw line. We're up 20, as I say, and everybody on the bench is shouting at me as I take the slot right next to the shooter at the stripe. My teammates are shouting, no, back up, Shaq, back up. So I go behind the shooter to the top of the key, and they're still shouting, further back. I go to midcourt. It's a ridiculous place to be standing for when the other team is shooting free throws, but I do it. And the guy misses it, and they kick the ball to my guy, Richie, and I'm making way to my favorite spot, the right baseline. That's where I know I'm going to make it. And I've been practicing all season long, and I know I'm going to make it. And I know that this sounds like 2020 hindsight, but somehow I felt good. I knew I was going to make this shot this day. That's not my usual way, but I knew on this day the stroke was sound. And Richie gets the ball, and I see him, and he's at about the 10 second stripe, and he throws the ball to me, and now the ball's coming to me, and out of the right corner of my eye, I can see the people in the bleachers standing up in anticipation, ready to laugh at me or maybe even cheer if this ball should go through the hole. The ball is on its way to me, and I decide, you know, it would be embarrassing in this special moment. What if your toe is on the line? Like, just make sure. So I just made sure my toe wasn't on the line real quick. And I looked back up, and the ball was already on me, and it hit me in the hands and went out of bounds. And that was the end of my high school basketball career.